Good afternoon. Today is Monday, February the 13th, 44th day of the new year. You know, some people are actually celebrating Lincoln's birthday today.
Actually, really?
There were a bunch of county employees walking around in jeans, and the parking lots were empty, so I finally found a couple, and I said, how come? I guess it's Lincoln's birthday, and next week is either President's Day or Washington's birthday, depending on how you look at it.
That's right. That's right. There's freedom and flexibility, and schools generally combine them into next week sometime.
Yeah, or all week.
Yeah, or all week for some of the local schools. That's true.
For some of those. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking, well, quick little hit about the earthquake and what the school's reaction is, planning, as well as the physical, here's what we did. With earthquakes and other emergency drills. We'll also spend a little bit of time talking about the school bus. Last time Gary was here, he was exercised, frustrated, motivated to action. So yes. We'll talk a little bit about some of that and the upshot. And was it all peaches and cream or was it something else? So we'll talk a little. Boy, that sounds good, doesn't it? Peaches and cream.
Yes,
I always
it
get
is.
The hankering out of season. And we'll also get a state budget update as well. So we got a bunch of different things to talk about. We'll do it when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Gary Eagles. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from G.K. Chesterton. Quote, merely having an open mind is nothing. The object of opening the mind as of opening the mouth, is to shut it again on something solid. So you're telling me
yes.
to shut it?
All I'm saying is that wisdom is the art of knowing when to speak and when to listen.
Well, Kenny and Rogers said it much more better than that.
Much more better than
that? Much more better than that. Got to know when to hold them.
Yeah, and when to fold them. That is true. Well, I'll tell you. We were talking about school busing, and that was the issue. Certainly, we spent a lot of time on it last month and when I was here, and of course, we were in the thick of things at that time when the mid-year budget cuts had targeted the total elimination of home-to-school transportation, all the little yellow buses out there for both regular education and special ed students. And that was one of them we could have folded in on and said, oh, hey, you know, done deal, and the state's decided, and you can't fight City Hall kind of a thing. But that's not true. You know, we doubled down locally on that, and we got our measure passed, and it corrected the problem.
Now, we heard, and I know there was a lot of positioning. All of a sudden, everybody's holding the big yellow school bus in the palm of their hand and for the photo opportunities and whatnot. $18 million? Was that the figure?
Actually, the total cost is $276 million. Pretty big price tag.
So where do they get the money from, and who now is left out?
Oh, well, see, education still took a hit. But instead of the targeted cut to transportation, which affects different districts, unequally throughout the state, because not all districts have a transportation program, and not all districts have an extensive transportation program, what the state did is it sat back and said, look, education has to take its share of the mid-year reductions. So we're going to take a small amount of reduction, about $42 a child, for every child in every district in the state of California. It's called off the revenue limit.
Called the Eagles plan?
Yeah.
No. That's about the number you used.
It was the Eagles plan in terms of what I thought the solution strategy was, because, as far as I'm concerned, this is a single public education system. We rise and fall together. And the only equitable way to affect reductions like this is to take it off the general fund revenue limit and then allow local districts to figure out where they were going to reduce. But $42 will cut, small things out of budgets, It will not have the devastating impact that cutting transportation would have. Southern Humboldt became our poster child locally. Their reduction would have been about $670 a child. Maple Creek would have lost $1,400 a child. And so, you know, we had quite a spread. $42 per student is within the realm of conceivability and reasonableness.
And that's across the board, every kid,
all districts,
state of California.
Yes. And so transportation is then left alone, at least in the current year, but it starts out next year with zero funding. So we have to go back to the
zero funding. Does that mean that everything is zero-based funding?
No, zero funding for transportation. It's totally eliminated for next year right now in the governor's budget.
So what diff?
Well, what we have
other
to do.
Other than a little time.
Well, here's what happened. The governor based his January starting point at the mid-year cut. So with the automatic trigger being transportation going to zero, he started with zero. So it's not like he took a separate action to reduce transportation for next year. He just didn't. He just continued it at zero, believing that it would already be eliminated. So now what we have to do is go back in and find about $670 million in the education funding for next year and redirect it to transportation.
So transportation, in essence, takes a higher priority in education than other elements of public education.
It has to
It fixed sum game.
It has to take a higher priority than some aspects. You know, I said to folks during this whole political debate, you know, they don't want us to leave a child behind. You know, the old No Child Left Behind federal law. But they don't care if we leave them at home. I mean, you've got to get reasonable about this. In a rural county, you've got to get the kids.
I thought you were going to say you'd leave them at the bus stop. Gee. KINS, News and Information Times, 421. We'll be back with more from Gary Eagles.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 425. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, there has been no reports of any kind of damage with the earthquake this afternoon. But
fortunately, no.
We haven't heard from Wichipec, you know, the general store. I'm sure that there's some stuff down on the floor there. But in our area or in the schools, what is normal protocol for an earthquake or a windstorm? And this morning we had a bunch of areas without power too. So if there wasn't a generator or if the generator ran out of gas or that kind of, what is a normal protocol that you guys have in place for the non-normal, the non-anticipated?
Okay. Well, let me just give you, because it differs depending upon the type of emergency that you're under. So, for example, the earthquake. Students and teachers, all staff, are taught to duck and cover. So the first thing is you get under a desk, you get under a table, and that's how you protect yourself. You know, we've had this kind of ongoing debate that, you know, when I was going through school, we were taught to stand in doorways.
Sorry, that's still where I go.
And but well, you can't fit underneath the desk.
Well, okay, so I hunch under the doorway.
Yeah, but you know that's the general rule is that's actually not that safe. You know, you got swinging doors, you got a lot of other things to think about. And of course, what's happened is that a lot of people rush outdoors because they think that's safer, but actually, it's not. So you get under. Now, if you're talking about electrical outage, we check with the utility company very quickly to find out the nature of the utility, because you can operate schools for a small period of time without lights. You can operate it with slightly reduced heating temperatures. You just can't fall too dramatically. But if it's slightly cool, kids can wear their coats inside as well as out for a while. What you can't deal with is if water is shut off.
Oh, certainly if the water main is snapped.
If water is shut off, toilets don't run, drinking water doesn't run, and you can't get water in, you don't operate.
Everybody goes home, yeah.
Right. And then if you don't have, as I said, utilities to keep a modest level of heat running, then that's an issue. Today's classrooms often don't have the number of windows that some of the older classrooms had, in which cases, electricity going off would be a problem. I can tell you from a business standpoint, when the electricity goes off, those of us in the central administration in the offices wonder what we can do, because we are so dependent on the internet, on connection for everything that we do, whether it's student attendance or financial planning or communications with members of the public. Virtually, it's all done electronically. So when that electricity goes down, there are a lot of systems that really come to a screeching halt.
You'd open the window and yell this way. We'd probably hear you.
Probably could, too. But I'll tell you, in a lot of emergencies, kids are safer at school than they are at home, or safer than they would be if they were out on the highway. So we look at that very carefully before we actually shut down schools and send kids home. The reason we do that is because, we're responsible for those children for the period of time they would normally be in school. If we're going to shorten that time period and we haven't been able to contact parents, we've got a problem. We can't just go drop off a student 3 hours early to an empty house. That's just not appropriate. We do a lot of effort to contact parents if it's an emergency situation and we need to get them home, to make sure there's a parent that will be there to receive their children, particularly for the young ones, of course. Because otherwise, parents would not expect their children to be home and wouldn't protect them. Also, the facility construction. I mean, I wouldn't want to be any place other than in a school during an earthquake, because of the standards that schools are constructed on with the Field Act regulations that have been in place now for many decades. Schools, government agencies, and the like are some of the best built structures. Matter of fact, during today's earthquake, I had the opportunity to be in attendance at a meeting in which we had a number of community members there. And, of course, our local CEO of the local hospital corporation, Joe Mark, was in attendance at the meeting. And
he bragged on in the tower.
Well,
huh?
And we talked about that. We said very briefly, he says, well, I'm not worried about the tower at all, but I've got to go check on the rest of my facility. And really, that is the whole issue. I was not worried about the school facilities. I would have been worried about community sites.
Looking at the independent power backup that you do have, and you mentioned PG&E also,
right.
Do you get better, quicker response than we do? Because we have a tough time with the staffing, trying to find out really what's going on. I mean, we got a number of calls this morning, the 6 o'clock hour. I'm sure you guys did too. Rio Dell's without power. Miranda's without power. All these various communities are without power. But to get confirmation from PG&E and when there'd be backup and what the situation was, what the cause was, it's really challenging anymore.
Yes, it is. Even though the schools are part of the emergency management response of the community, and I have representatives on my staff that actually attend those administrative planning meetings that they have countywide, and of course during any kind of emergency involving the schools will be included on the list. But unfortunately, we don't get some of the information as quickly as we'd like to either.
It's 4:31.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lempus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Gary Eagles. Gary, the state budget has just got to be something that just, you know, being a native Californian has got to just give you so much pride.
Is that the word I was thinking of?
Yeah, well, okay. Or pain.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's more pain than pride, I'll tell you. Here's the frustrating part that I have with the current state budget. Right now, fortunately for everyone in California, the state general fund is going up. It's not going up fast, but it is going up. It is beginning to recover. And yet, education next year sits in the crosshairs of the governor's budget for further reductions. I understand why he's done that. He's done that because the polls show that people might be willing to vote for tax increases for education, but they're not going to vote it in for anything else. So he's basically said to the voters, pass my November tax measure or the schools are going to get cut. What he doesn't tell you is that if the measure passes, the schools aren't going to get any more money. What the schools get is, it's a shuffling of money at the state level. We get some deferrals canceled, which means we actually get paid in a more timely way. That will, I will admit, affect the budget, affects the cash flow, affects budgeting, and will allow for greater flexibility in the future. It does help pay down what the governor has called the wall of debt, which is basically, in large measure, a credit card owed to education. But what he fails to mention is in that ballot initiative, he lowers the funding guarantee to education by several hundred million dollars on a permanent basis from now on.
Now, can that be done? I thought
it's a constitutional measure, so if the people vote for it,
it changes the constitution. It's one of those hyphens.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So here we have an economy that's improving, and we're subject to $4.6 billion reduction next year under the threat unless people want to raise their taxes. I think that's abhorrent. I think if we want to be honest, they want to cut education in order to help save other parts of the state general fund. I understand what they want to do. I think they need to be honest about doing it.
Just at least say what it is.
Just say what it is and go forth and do it. So what
does have the lower priorities at this point? Or lowering priorities?
Health and social service programs in the state of California are on the bottom. Prison funding is toward the bottom. But until the last 18 months, the governor and the legislature were absolutely unable to do anything about reducing costs in the criminal justice system. The only thing that's going to help on paper, and I think it probably will, is the realignment, moving some responsibility for state inmate control to local governments. But the local county governments, the sheriff's department, they want the resources to go along with it. I think what you're going to see is an adjustment in how long individuals are actually in custody, in jail, imprisoned, and more alternative sentencing, whether there'll be more SWAT teams or more home detention or whatever have you. I think you're going to see more creative ways of trying to deal with the with people who commit crimes.
Is anybody talking about less social payments? California welfare.
They actually have reduced welfare payments, but
not to the position of where neighboring states are.
Well, I do believe they're in some ways still slightly higher, and I think what they're struggling with in the state is that it costs. You know, in California, it costs more to live, and therefore the subsidies have arguably been a little bit higher. But here's
portions of the state.
Portions of the state. But here's the rub for education right now. We're scheduled for the potential, if the measure does not pass, if the tax measure in November does not pass or something, one of the tax measure, $368 per child reduction.
If it doesn't pass.
If it doesn't pass. In addition to transportation right now, as we were talking about earlier, is completely off the table. For Humboldt County schools, that represents about a $10 million cut. Now, if you look at the average teacher's salary and benefits for a year, that's the equivalent of a 150 teacher cut. You know, at some point, you got to say enough is enough. Education is one of the things in the state constitution that is supposed to be a high priority. There are many things in this state that California does for a public service that's not in the constitution. Education is. I recognize that public schools are an expensive venture in this state. We have over 630 million children, or 6.3 million, million children, excuse me, in this state to be educated. One out of every 11 public school students in the nation attends school in California. Of that, 10% of the state's kids are educated by one district, and that's Los Angeles Unified. But anything you do with kids is going to be a big number. You know, 6.3 million kids, that's a lot of kids. And it takes a lot of expense by the general fund, but it also represents our future.
So as California's in this vice, I think it's fair to call it the economic picture of vice.
Yes.
And there are pressures, and you have all the various special interest groups that are out there. Are there any thoughts of a zero-based budget and start from zero and fund is, you know, kind of like it, I hate saying, and like at home when you're balancing your budget. Okay, you got a stack of money. You got a bunch of different areas that are looking to feed off the money, okay? You fund one, whatever the number one priority is, to the full extent. Then you feed two, three, four, and you just go as deep as you can go. And when you stop.
Well, that would be a good strategy if you could actually get people to agree on what the number one priority is. But here's what's happened in California. The residents, in my opinion, and the voters particularly, who go to the polls and vote to support everything that's on the ballot, have always done so without a real idea of the cost implications. And so what ends up happening is that they go after all these things because they sound good. They are good. You know, government does many good things. And
there's a lot of pork in there, though, too.
There's always, well, I think there's far less than there used to be. I think there could be some efficiencies in the way we go about doing business. But I think the priorities are all, you know, there's a lot of important things. And some would argue for fixing the potholes, and some would argue that we have to have, you know, sanitation taken care of, and some would believe you ought to have an education program.
But a lot of us also think that these things ought to be sunsetted or at least reviewed every 10 or 15 years instead of being built upon and built upon and built upon.
I think that may be true, but we're going to have to get a more informed electorate who are aware of what they're doing when they go to the polls and support something. We also have to have legislation tied to income. So if anybody who proposes to expend something, they ought to be forced to propose where the money's going to come at the same time. So you're either going to raise revenues to match a new expenditure, or you're going to lower something. I can tell you that would curtail a lot of bills roving through the legislature.
I got another one.
What's that?
If we had more people employed,
that would certainly
help. Have two people covering for one person and all their benefits that they're getting on the ride. And I think that there's a lot of that upside down stuff that's going on, where initially it was 14-1 and now it's 2-1. You know, there's a lot of money that would normally be going to support various things that now just isn't there because the state's sucking it all up. You know?
I understand, yes.
I think a really grand plan, and we'll go to break, would be if nobody had their taxes taken automatically.
Oh, and everybody had to write a monthly check to Uncle Sam?
Monthly or weekly or biweekly. You want to talk about tax reform and getting things dialed in real quick and finding those priorities you were just referencing? I'd give it 6 weeks. KINS, News and Information Times, 4:43. We'll return with more from Gary Eagles.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 447, final segment of the afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, some of the different stuff that we're hearing about now, we're getting, I guess we'll have the diatribe about the federal budget and, you know, coming in unbalanced already and who's going to vote and blah, 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 blah. Are there federal dollars that end up in the local schools for education? Or is it a funnel to the state, and then the state takes their piece, and then it ends up to the locals?
Actually, most of the money actually goes through the state in some capacity, and it's primarily for monitoring purposes. I will say this, that the California Department of Education has been significantly curtailed over the years and has suffered just along with school districts in terms of reductions. But yes, there is that funneling of money through them to us. Very little is directly to local educational institutions these days, except through some limited grant programs. But here's the problem with the federal government. First of all, it's not really clear what the role of the federal government is.
Education was states' rights.
Education is supposed to be a state right. Where the federal government first got involved had to do with equalizing the revenues that various states had to apply to special education. And that came through the original Title I.
Oh, was special ed specifically?
Education and Secondary Education Act. It happened in the 1960s as part of the whole sweep.
Great Society.
Yes. And the whole concept was to ensure, particularly states in the South, that they had equal revenues to help support education. That has greatly morphed over the years to a much more significant intrusion into state education issues by the federal government. Back to the old quip, he who has the gold rules, and that's the golden rule. Well, that's what the federal government
believes. I thought you
were going
to use the blob and or
but here,
those 50s
but here's
movies.
Something in defense of the federal government. I do believe American society and the future of this great nation is dependent upon the health and quality of the public education system. That's not to take away from good private school alternatives that are certainly out there, but this country and its educational and economic opportunities that followed were based on a strong, free, accessible public education system. So I do believe there's a federal interest in the quality of education. I just think there needs to be a redefinition of role.
Balanced budget would be nice too.
Yes, and a recommitment to special ed needs, which is a national concern.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me again.
We've been Talking Shop with Gary Eagles. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.
Oh, look at that.